In this episode, the United States Bankruptcy Appellate Panel of the Ninth Circuit hears argument in re Schuplein. This is a bankruptcy dispute between a former employer and an employee who allegedly took trade secrets when he left the company. The employer, Copy Solutions, sued for willful and malicious injury under Section 523A, 6 of the Bankruptcy Code, seeking to have the debt declared non-dischargeable. The employer also relied on a 2018 employment agreement with confidentiality and proprietary information clauses. After a trial, the bankruptcy court ruled for the employee, finding that, while he may have used confidential information, the employer failed to connect the dots with sufficient evidence. The employer lost on the merits and was ordered to pay $28,000 in the prevailing employee's attorney's fees based on a fee-shifting provision in that 2018 agreement. The core legal issue on appeal is narrow: whether the litigation was on the contract, within the meaning of California's contract fee-shifting statute, such that the prevailing employee can recover fees even though the employer had made the contract central to its claims throughout the trial. Jonathan Hayes appears for the appellant, the former employer. He now begins his argument.
In re Schuplein, I'm Jonathan Hayes, appearing for appellant.
Morning, Mr. Hayes.
Morning, Your Honor.
So, Jonathan Hayes. I'm assuming you're not going to reserve any time since there's nobody on the other side.
Right. I was going to make a joke about that, but I won't.
But, all right.
John Hayes, RHM Law, for the appellant, Copy Solutions. And Your Honor, I really don't want to belabor the, I think our brief pretty much laid it out. I have a few comments, though. And then, of course, I'm happy to answer questions, but... You know, this is an employer-employee dispute, the age-old problem. The employee left, and the allegation is he stole trade secrets, and that caused harm to the employer. They had a trial. Judge Mund, in her memorandum, I mean, she went through really a lot of effort on that memorandum. But she said that, you know, the idea of stealing secret information from your employer, former employer, that works for willful and malicious injury. But we didn't connect the dots. Former counsel who handled the trial didn't connect the dots. But she said that the Uniform Trade Secrets Act, California, Civil Code 3436.1, that would have worked. I mean, she even said that Mr. Schuplein probably did use the information, but we didn't connect the dots. It was a failure of evidence. And I'll tell you, I spent a lot of effort trying to argue that we did connect the dots. But, you know, it's a clear error. And my client is interviewing malpractice counsel about that issue. But the bottom line is the only issue was A6, willful and malicious injury.
Section 523 of the Bankruptcy Code lists exceptions to discharge, debts that survive even after bankruptcy. Subsection A6 covers willful and malicious injury by the debtor to another entity or to the property of another entity. If a creditor proves this standard, the debt cannot be wiped out in bankruptcy. Here, the employer tried to show the former employee willfully and maliciously injured it by taking trade secrets, but the bankruptcy court found the evidence insufficient.
There was no fraud ever alleged. There was A4, which, I mean, there was no trust. There was never any chance, I don't think, of A4 working. But so what we limited the appeal to is the fees, the $28,000 in fees that were awarded. which came from this 2018 agreement. I brought a copy of it. Four pages. There really isn't much to this. Nobody argued that this was unenforceable. This is where the attorney's fees award came from. So nobody argued that this was unenforceable, or even any part of it was unenforceable, except the non-compete clause, which again, to my mind, is evidence of the malpractice. I mean, in California, everybody knows that a non-compete clause is unenforceable.
California law generally makes non-compete clauses unenforceable. An employer cannot prohibit an employee from working for a competitor after leaving the job. Courts will not enforce such restrictions. In this case, counsel emphasizes that the 2018 agreement contained a non-compete clause that everyone agreed was void, yet it consumed much of the trial argument.
Enforceable. You can't tell your employee, look, you know, if you leave us, you got to go do something else because you can't compete with it. That's not enforceable. And it never was an issue. It was about trade secrets. There are two paragraphs in the agreement. One is called confidentiality. One is called proprietary information. Nobody ever questioned whether there's some question about what that means, what the paragraph means. In other words, the court was never challenged with interpreting this agreement in order to reach the issue of was there willful and malicious injury to person or property. What Judge Mund did say, and she started out saying, you know, and it's attorney's fees. We use a liberal construction, and she quoted that from the Penrod case.
Under California law, a prevailing party in litigation on a contract that includes an attorney's fees clause can recover those fees. The key question is whether the dispute is truly on the contract, meaning the court had to interpret or enforce the contract's terms to resolve the case. If the contract was merely background evidence or reference but not actually enforced, the dispute may not qualify and fees would not be available.
In 2016, 2015, I tell you, when that case came out, I was telling everybody, you know, boy, this is great from now on. You know, motions for relief, that's on the contract. Motions to value, everything we do almost is about a debt. A debt is, if there's a document talks about the debt and it has attorney's fees, the dispute is on the contract. If we win, we get attorney's fees. And, you know, my joy didn't last all that long because Ninth Circuit came along with Boz and said, if the court, maybe there is a contract, but if the court didn't need to enforce the contract, then the issue is not on the contract, and therefore there's no right to attorney's fees. That was a pension fund. The agreement wasn't even with the debtor.
So Mr. Hayes,
pardon?
Well, if I could interrupt you just for a moment. What concerns me here is not so much the decision. What concerns me is that that's not what you argued, not you personally, but your copy solutions argued below. It made the agreement the centerpiece of the litigation. It argued to the judge that it gave rise to the breach of fiduciary duty claim and gave rise to the malicious and willful injury claim under A6. It said that this agreement was critical. And that's the argument that was made. And that was why the court had to look at the contract and decide whether it was going to be the result or not going to be the result. And it determined that it wouldn't. But you're the one that, not you personally, but your side is the one that put that issue before the court. Had they not done that, maybe this argument would have more merit. But as far as I can see, the copy solutions pointed to the 18 agreement as the source of the debtor's fiduciary duty and the basis of its defalcation. Copy solutions alleged the debtor wrongfully and maliciously caused injury by violating the terms of the 2018 agreement. The bankruptcy court interpreted the 2018 agreement to ascertain the scope of the agency and to determine whether he owed fiduciary duties to copy solutions.
An employee can owe fiduciary duties to an employer, duties of loyalty and care that go beyond the written employment agreement. Whether such duties exist and what they cover can depend on the employee's role, the nature of the confidential information, and sometimes the terms of an employment agreement. Here, the bankruptcy court examined the 2018 agreement to determine the scope of any fiduciary relationship.
That's what happened. Now, she didn't come out that way, but that's great in hindsight to be able to say, well, then it wasn't an issue on the contract, but you made it about the contract. This is the consequence of what the judge believed you were trying to accomplish. I don't see how it's unfair to hold Copy Solutions liable as the non-prevailing party when that's what you were arguing. So help me through that.
I've thought a lot about that. I mean, and I've read the record, and but I would just respond this way. It's towards the end of what you were saying, you used the word unfair, and I don't know that this is about unfair. This is an issue of law. The attorneys, most of that actually was about the non-compete clause. They went on and on and on at trial, and then in the closing brief about the non-compete clause, the court said that was never, and neither side, both sides agreed. In fact, Mr. Suplain told Mr. Zhao, you know, I'll sign it, but that's not enforceable. So they kept bringing it up without a doubt by the attorneys. Did that make the
litigation on the contract?
I was catching myself there. I almost said that.
I mean, because the other two elements are the contract provides for the recovery of attorney's fees to awarded to one of the parties prevailing, and that the party seeking fees was the prevailing party.
To recover attorney's fees under a contractual provision, three elements must be met. The contract must provide for fee recovery. One of the parties must prevail in the action, and the action must be on the contract, meaning the court's decision turned on interpreting or enforcing the contract itself. Counsel concedes the first two but disputes the third.
So the last two elements are clear. The only argument is it wasn't on the contract.
Yes.
And that's because the court didn't rely on the contract in the ruling, but that's not the position that your clients took in the litigation. They made the contract the centerpiece of their position, both for the malicious willful injury claim and for the breach of fiduciary duty claim.
Well, the court didn't rely on the contract.
It was brought up by your client and your predecessor attorneys. As Judge Gann said, they made it part of the contract. But the court rejected that. And it was the rejection of it so that your client was not the prevailing party. They said this contract should give us a basis for our claim. And the court said, no, it doesn't. So that part of it was on the contract.
I don't agree that the court says that the court didn't rule that you lose because of this, the way I interpret this contract. The court ruled you didn't have enough evidence to prove anything, really. And therefore you lose. So we're definitely not the prevailing party. But, and it seems to me, at least, it's so obvious California law says you can't steal your former employees, your former employer's trade secrets. that this was pretty much irrelevant. And I have no doubt it was irrelevant, but I understand that.
I don't want to sound confused here, but if someone comes in and brings an action related to, okay, I'm not using odd, related to a contract and say, this is important for the court to conclude. And the court says, no, you're wrong. Well, you were wrong on an issue that was on the contract. No, the contract doesn't apply here. So if a party wins in convincing the court that contract doesn't apply, don't they get to say it shouldn't have been raised? And as a result, because it shouldn't have been raised, what you raised does have a contract clause. We're entitled as prevailing party. I'm confused why that doesn't follow.
I'm not sure how to answer that. But I would say, walking around the block thinking about this a lot, I think that the trial would have went exactly the same way it did had there not been the contract.
But maybe your client would not have gotten attorney's fees awarded if they didn't raise the contract issue.
Well, I was going to correct myself there that it wouldn't have gone exactly the same way because the attorneys wouldn't have kept saying, well, what about the contract? I mean, the contract says this or that. That would have been left out had there been a trial without this contract. But, my view anyway is, it's on the contract if this is actually the issue. If the attorneys are saying this is the issue, but it clearly isn't, then it's not on the contract.
But isn't it on the contract that you determine that the contract is not an operative document? If one side says, hey, you should look at this, we're suing and saying that this contract is an important part of our claim, and that's rejected. Can't the party?
I mean, that's a problem, right? In retrospect, you could have argued state law and never even raise the agreement, and then this would not have been an issue. But because you brought it before the court, your side, I don't mean you individually, then you're stuck with what the record is. And the record was you made a series of arguments over and over again before this court that the court should interpret the agreement in the way that you believed it should be interpreted. And as a result, it should find for you. And that's why the litigation was on the contract.
I can't believe I actually talked for 14 minutes. A thought just popped into my head, an example, is what if the contract said, we agree we won't murder each other? Murder is murder. What the contract says is irrelevant. If it's murder, it's murder. And if one side is saying, well, the contract says, we won't murder each other.
But if one party was making that argument, they weren't murdered, so they couldn't have made the argument.
I'll leave it at that.
Thank you for your arguments. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll take the matter under advisement and we'll try to issue a decision promptly. Thank you.
Thank you.
As the panel takes the matter under advisement, nothing in today's argument implies how the court will rule. The bankruptcy appellate panel will issue a written opinion in due course, likely within several months. The narrow question is whether an employer that loses on the merits but invoked a contract throughout the trial must pay the employee's fees under that same contract's fee-shifting clause.